Welcome to Season 8 of EdTech Insiders, where we speak to educators, founders, investors, thought leaders, and the industry experts who are shaping the global education technology industry. Every week, we bring you the Week in EdTech, important updates from the EdTech field, including news about core technologies and issues we know will influence the sector, like artificial intelligence, extended reality, education politics, and more. We also conduct in-depth interviews with a wide variety of EdTech thought leaders and bring you insights and conversations from EdTech conferences all around the world. Remember to subscribe, follow, and tell your EdTech friends about the podcast and to check out the EdTech Insiders Substack newsletter. Thanks for being part of the EdTech Insiders community. Enjoy the show.
Hello, EdTech Insiders listeners. We've got a special episode for you today. It comes from the Deliberative Democracy Lab. We've got three high school seniors. That includes Sia Verma, Sophie Yang, and Dev Krishnamurthy, all talking about their experience as high schoolers with AI. It also goes along with a report that was released around AI in education and a poll for high school educators as well as high school students. So check it out. Excited to bring it to you. Hello, everybody. It is back to EdTech Insiders, and we're doing a special episode on AI in education. And we have an incredible group of student leaders and ambassadors today. We have Sophie, Dev, and Sia. Thanks so much for joining EdTech Insiders.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much for having us.
So in this episode, we really just want to hear student perspectives on AI. And it's our understanding that you were actually doing some research about AI and what's going on in classrooms around the country and around the world. Before we get too far into that, though, let's have you introduce yourselves to our listeners. Sophie, why don't you get started?
Of course. Hi, my name is Sophie Yang. I'm a current senior at Lynbrook High School in San Jose, California. I'm very interested in economics, public policy, and law.
Sia.
Hi, my name is Sia, and I'm a senior at Quarry Lane School in Dublin, California. I'm interested in exploring global public policy, technology policy, and economics.
And Dev.
Hey, everybody. My name is Dev Krishnamurthy, and I currently am a senior at Saratoga High School in the Bay Area. I'm currently in Saratoga, California, and I am currently interested in exploring computer science and political science. And all three of us are research assistants at the Stanford Deliberative Democracy Lab.
So before we go too far, tell us a little bit about the Deliberative Democracy Lab. How did you get connected with it and what does it do?
For us, what we currently do in the Deliberative Democracy Lab is that we currently work with deliberative polling as well as working in creating these polls that gather a lot of, at least the poll that we currently did was on student perspectives on AI, where we kind of dissected student opinions on artificial intelligence in the classroom, how they feel about artificial intelligence being used as a teaching method, how some schools such as mine have been cracking down on artificial intelligence and such as ChatGPT and not really allowing it to be used.
Sia, how did you find out about it?
Yeah, so we were just connected with the lab early on, and I think the work that we're doing is really interesting. Sort of to speak broadly on deliberative polling, I think we're trying to really combat like key issues with public opinion that are the cause of polarization. And a lot of that we've seen comes from like general ignorance of the facts, but that also comes from like having phantom opinions and being in communication with people that have the exact same opinions as you. So deliberative polling really puts participants in an environment where they're communicating with people that have like completely different political or social beliefs. And that really gets them to think about, okay, where did I get the information that is informing my opinion? And can I change that opinion? Should I change that opinion? So those are sort of the things that deliberative polling is combating.
And Sophie, can you tell us a little bit around why the decision to engage high school students and why high school students are at the heart of this deliberative democracy movement?
Yeah, so all three of us actually joined the lab at different times, I believe, but we all met together one time and just had a casual conversation that became an idea about creating a national deliberative poll centered around high school students, since all three of us were part of the target demographic and we're all greatly exposed to AI. We received encouragement from our mentors and eventually just began acting on our idea.
It's really exciting and obviously a very timely idea because we're not that long into the generative AI revolution. And I think schools and students are all still just trying to figure out what to do with this. So you've done this big poll. Let's talk about some of the results that you've found so far. Sia, can I ask you to just go through some of the things that you're finding in your poll, and then we'll dig down on each of them?
Of course. So overall, students definitely think that AI can be beneficial to them and their education, but they also recognize that there's a negative impact in play, especially if there's no guidance or direction. So the most supported policy sort of related to that was that schools should provide guidelines and resources to teach students about how to use AI responsibly, with 4 out of 5 students favoring it before and after the deliberation. That was one of the key ones. And then the most supported penalty proposal, and by penalty, we mean like the punishment of sorts for students if they use AI irresponsibly, was that students should be subject to a warning or a grade deduction. And support for that actually increased from around 72% to 78% of participants. And then sort of last key thing that we thought personally was really interesting was that students put the most trust in their communities, not necessarily, you know, the creators of AI tools or like people online or social media platforms, but almost like 77% of participants put like most of their trust in their community. And that was really key to our findings because, you know, if teachers are the ones using AI and guiding their students, that's where the trust is being built.
It makes sense. And it's really interesting to hear that students are seeing sort of both sides of it. They realize there's so much potential, but they also see there is the potential for abuse and there needs to be systems in place and that they're looking for their schools and communities to really make sense of that. You know, Dev, you mentioned that your school has been cracking down, right, quote unquote, on AI. And this is something we've been seeing, you know, on and off for the last year and a half. Some schools and districts have banned ChatGPT and then pulled the ban out. Every school has its own sort of way of thinking about it. Tell us a little bit about the crackdown that you've experienced and what the teens that you've talked to are saying about this sort of punitive, you know, version of, hey, nobody can use this.
Yeah. So in my school, what happened was there was a group of students that were using ChatGPT in their AP US history assignments and were using them as like a way to help them out with like essays, as well as give them like ideas and help formulate like ideas for starting essays. And the policy regarding that slowly became a policy where our school has this built-in Turnitin system, which basically had an AI detection system that detects like, okay, has there been any AI that's like throughout this essay? And what happened with a couple of like my friends was that they were falsely flagged as well. Like the system was in fact flawed and they ended up being given an academic integrity violation for essentially a false flagging, which they ended up disputing and it worked out in the end. And another really key point, like when I was talking to them, was that they felt like AI was giving them, like they had a lot of stuff going on in their home lives and extracurriculars. And sometimes students don't really have enough time to do their like these giant essays that their teachers are assigning. So they do have to inevitably resort to using ChatGPT or other resources as a way to help them out. And what I found from discussing and speaking with them further was that AI also helps them with generating new ideas, not necessarily writing the essays for them, but putting ideas that they might conceptualize in their head and putting them into actual words and into paper. So they're able to get a better understanding of the concepts that they're learning. Something that I've myself used it for study guides, like summarizing long articles. And recently I had a AP Lang test and I ended up using ChatGPT as a study guide, as a way to summarize and bullet point important pieces of information. And I feel like it could be a pretty key tool in studying. So, yeah.
What you're bringing up, I think, is such a core issue in schools right now. There's this sort of arms race a little bit. Schools are using tools like Turnitin or HonorLock, or there are all sorts of different proctoring tools or plagiarism tools that are being used. Those are ed tech companies and tools, but nobody wants false positives. Nobody wants to get students in trouble for something they haven't done. And then meanwhile, you mentioned that the policies changed slowly over time. And I think that's also something that's happening. I know all three of you are really interested in public policy. Sophie, can you tell us a little bit about, you know, based on what you're hearing from your teen participants in your poll, how might policies start to be created that don't change, that actually can work to, you know, limit the sort of plagiarism, but also allow students to do all the really positive things like create study guides and save themselves time on things that are allowed? Yeah, Sophie, I'd love to hear you on this.
So from what we have gathered in our data, the first thing we realized was that people's understanding of AI vary drastically depending on where they're from, how their curriculum is structured in the classroom, and what tools and resources are readily available to them. So policy-wise, we believe the first thing, or one of the first things to be done, is to spread awareness of this tool, what it can do, and what it sort of debusting or busting the myths surrounding it. Because like looking at our data, a huge concern from participants was that AI is going to misrepresent their work, is going to dock them by mistake, is going to like flag them by mistake. And that is a very real issue. But at the same time, there are some concerns that are much less valid, such that we've actually heard in some of our polls that, or in some of our deliberations, that AI can hack into their computer system or retain a lot of their private information. And if we're all using the same tool, our understanding should be holistic. So we believe that policies should first address that in spreading awareness on what AI can do. And from there, then everyone will have an objective understanding. From there, what could we use AI for that is both productive and not a violation of anyone's privacy?
I love how you're mentioning, you know, awareness of what these tools can do, and a shared awareness and a sort of holistic awareness across the school environment. I think one of the things that we've wrestled with on the podcast is that when you learn what AI can do, it can do almost anything, and it can be used in so many different contexts. And that's actually what makes policy so hard, is that the gradient, you know, the line between a study guide and something that might be considered an aid is a moving line. Nobody's ever had this much power in the hands of learners. I'd love to hear all of you talk about that. You are all AI early adopters, and you've been using it yourselves. How do you see this new world in which learners can do so many more things so much faster than they ever have before? Sia, I'd love to start with you.
Yeah, of course. I think something that I like to compare AI to is that it should be a supplement to our learning. It should not be a replacement to our learning. So like you said, it can definitely enhance students' educational journeys. AI makes education a lot more accessible. And I think generally, I feel like we're based in Silicon Valley in the Bay Area, and we have a different context for that. We are, you know, at the forefront of the AI revolution. And so it's definitely like top of mind for all my peers and my teachers and my administrators. And I've also spoken with students that are just in like central California who don't have as much access to the internet or don't have as much access to, you know, learning what AI means. But I think the moment you introduce like certain tools, even if it's as basic as, you know, like ChatGPT, like this exists and you just need some internet to make it work. Like, I think that is just, it's like a moment where I think they realize that like I can learn almost anything right here. And it does not replace a teacher, of course. But I think to understand new concepts, to supplement a teacher's way of teaching, I think it's doing a great job of that. And yeah, just like broadening the number of resources that students can use, it's definitely great at doing that.
And just jumping in here real quick to one of your question areas, I know we've talked mainly around writing essays or brainstorming or things like that. One of your questions was really around coding and using AI for code generation. And, you know, with computer science standards often not being met in high schools across America, in part because there's not enough teachers to teach coding, how did students respond for those types of use cases, not just, you know, authorship?
I can talk about that a bit from my perspective as a computer science student in my AP Computer Science Principles class. So I believe in some other computer science classes at my school, ChatGPT or any generative AI for that matter is completely off limits for students. So inside of the classroom, they're just not allowed to log into the website or anything or use it as a tool. But in my class in particular, my teacher did specify in the beginning of the year that ChatGPT is not only allowed, but it's also encouraged as a consulting tool to learn how to code. Because with every new concept learned and every new language mastered, there's a lot of intricacies that 1.5 hours of class just cannot cover in regards to everyone's concerns. So if we bring our questions and ask them to AI, we could potentially learn a lot more in class and implement that knowledge during exams and tests and real world problem solving. So that is how our teacher encourages us to use it. And I believe many students, such as myself, implement that tool in our studies.
Yeah, Dev?
Yeah, to build on Sophie's point, I also have used AI as a way to help grade my own like coding work and stuff like that. And I do feel like coding and like artificial intelligence are like inevitably going to be interlinked no matter what in terms of learning in any sort of fashion. Because even looking at GitHub, I've seen examples of like coworkers and friends who have used artificial intelligence as a way to help like edit and to like correct possible mistakes within like their programs. And I feel like it's just really a necessary tool to help build upon the skills of even the most well, like to build upon the most professional and the most complex of programs, it can still be used as a possible method. So,
yeah. In your analysis, you all looked at ChatGPT, but you also looked at things like GitHub and some of the coding co-pilots. You know, Dev, you mentioned grading. There's an entire section that you covered, which was really around teacher use of generative AI. And I have to confess, like, you know, having been a former teacher myself, there's a lot of excitement about teachers being more efficient or effective using AI to grade, to generate lesson plans. But it might feel differently if you're on the receiving end of an AI-generated grade. I'd be curious. First, let's just start with how did people in the polling, in the research that you looked at, how did they generally respond to the educators using AI? And what are the use cases that are favorable and maybe what are the ones that you have questions or concerns about? Yeah, let's go with Sia.
I think most students did support the proposal that teachers should use AI in their curriculums as long as it's guided again. And I think generally, almost half of the participants, and this like after the poll, there was increased support for this, but almost half the participants said that teachers should not use AI detection tools to verify the authenticity of student work. And one of the biggest factors with that, like Dave has mentioned, is false flags. And a lot of these students, I remember reading through the transcripts and some students mentioned that their teacher said that, you know, they were falsely flagged for their work. And so I think those, like in terms of the numbers, I think students don't want to be hypocrites in the sense that they should be allowed to use AI tools, but teachers should not be allowed. So I think through all of these discussions, students really started to understand the teacher perspective.
Does anybody else want to build on that? I think that makes a lot of sense.
I can add on that real quick. So throughout our entire poll and seeing how the participant opinion trends varied from before and after the poll, we realized that there is a large amount of skepticism in general surrounding how AI is used. People might trust AI, but not trust the person who is using it or vice versa. So we believe that that mentality has greatly impacted how students view their teachers and what they presume their teachers will use AI tools for.
It's so interesting hearing you all talk about how the interplay between the teachers, the students, and the AI for empowerment for things that students can do or that can save teachers time, and then the AI for sort of catching people at things or false flagging. It's such a complex interplay between each of these. I want to double down and dig in on one of the things you've all hinted at, I think. You know, Sia, you mentioned that you're an early adopter, or, you know, that being in the Bay Area, you're at the forefront of AI, which is definitely true. And that even in other parts of California, let alone other parts of the country and the world, people may not be exposed to it. And then Sophie and Dev, you're both computer science students and you're already using it. One of the things that people have worried about in this AI era is that people who already have a lot of cultural literacy, who know what's going on in the world, will start to use these tools and become, you know, super learners, super coders, do a ton, while others who are not exposed to it may continue to fall behind. And it might actually exacerbate inequalities. And others say, no, it'll raise all boats. Everybody suddenly has these incredible tools. And as long as we get it in front of people, you know, some of these inequalities will actually disappear. And I'm so curious about how you all see this, as well as, you know, what you've seen from some of the people you've talked to. Dev, let's start with you.
Yeah, from my own experience, I feel like ChatGPT and these other like chatbots and these other tools are essentially vital to the universalization of education and allowing students from all, not just the Bay Area, but all over the world to be able to, with a click of a button, just be able to access ChatGPT and simply ask a question and prompt a response from the program. And I feel like it can really level the playing field in terms of education discrepancies that are present in our society and could bridge the gap in the quality of education as well. Because although ChatGPT, the access of GPT 3.5 is somewhat varied, it still does add it still could add a lot to students' learning and how they're able to fundamentally understand topics in ways that they might not be able to in the classroom with limited resources. Since for ChatGPT, all you have to do is just sign in with your email and create a password and sign up, and then that's it. So
that's a great case for the leveling the playing field side of the argument. I'd love to hear others weigh in on it as well. Do you agree that this will be a force for equality, or are there other unintended consequences?
So we've been speaking with school boards around California to see what their policies have been and if our data can sort of help them. And something we realized through those discussions is that a lot of students cannot think about AI. There are schools and there are massive communities that are still recovering from the pandemic. A lot of us, you know, missed out on that key moment of social maturation, I guess, during middle school. If, you know, students were online in middle school, they didn't have access to Wi-Fi, and getting onto their classroom was super difficult, and they missed out on a year or two of real learning. And at such a young age, I think it was a really big topic for us, and it's close to home. But I think there are schools that have moved on, especially in areas where the students are more privileged socioeconomically. But then in other areas, students are still recovering. So AI is not, they just can't think about it right now. Teachers can't think about completely changing their curriculum. But I think there is definitely an argument to be made. Like they've said, if we raise awareness about AI, it can definitely help with sort of bridging that gap. Again, like they've said, I think if someone, you know, searches something up on Google and you get massive research papers, and if you don't have the background knowledge to sort of process those research papers, generative AI is that method to really boil down all that information and make it more accessible.
I'm curious how you all are thinking about career and your life prospects going forward. How has the dawn of the age of AI affected your thinking? Is it making you excited? Is it making you fearful? We've had an author on the show who basically said all entry-level jobs are going away and we need to have apprenticeships. Other people have said this means basically everybody can start their own company from their basement as a micro company. So we've heard both optimism and pessimism. We're curious what the three of you think. I'll start with you, Sophie.
Yeah, of course. That's something we actually discuss a lot amongst ourselves. To us, as people living in the Silicon Valley, we don't see AI as something that would replace humans, because there is a very emotional human trait in certain jobs and work that AI just hasn't been able to replace as of what we've seen today. But we also do acknowledge a lot of the concerns surrounding automation in certain job functions, like you said, entry-level jobs. There's a lot of overlap in what AI could do versus what a human could do at those entry-level jobs. That's all I have for now. I could add on to it after.
What do others think? Dev?
From my perspective, I do believe that AI, the issue of automation is a very real issue, as it has been slowly progressing over the last 20 years in terms of technological advancements. But I feel like this also calls a need for more jobs and different types of jobs and expanding the job market as well as a way to replace, as I feel like some jobs, as our economy advances and technology becomes more advanced, it'll cause more jobs to be created. So I feel like there will be a overall equilibrium in the job market, so to speak. But I also do realize that like AI has the issue of AI art and issues of AI creating video and false images has become a very prevalent issue in current society and could continue to become more of an issue. So that is something I feel like I myself and a lot of other up-and-coming students going to college will have to also be aware of in terms of like research and finding and creating companies. It's just navigating through a lot of misinformation that AI could exacerbate.
Yeah, so I'm going to move on. So the Deliberative Democracy Lab's big project is called the One Room Project, where basically every 5 years they get people who are voting in their first election, so 18-year-olds, into a room in Washington, D.C. They bring 500 randomly selected 18-year-olds from across America to Washington, D.C., and they go through this deliberative democracy project where you're not just asked survey questions, but you're really, you know, looking at both sides of the issue and then coming up with a conclusion. And they tried to time this. The last one was in 2019. They tried to time this with the federal election. Given that we're talking about all this innovation, all of this transformational power of technology, and then we have some really old, likely, you know, finalist candidates who are in the oldest, they will basically be the oldest president in history, whoever gets elected. How do you think about our elections and our political landscape, given everything that you're seeing and going through?
Yeah, so just to clarify, to the young America in One Room, this is the first time we're doing it. But then there have been America in One Room polls as well with just voters in general, not just first-time voters that were selected. And I did work a little bit on the last America in One Room that was done this past summer. And I really would say, like, we often think, and I think the media, part of why we think this is that the media is portraying it this way, that our country is immensely polarized and no one can agree on anything. And I think it does seem that way. It's definitely a problem. But personally, I do have faith in human conversation. And we've seen that like through the polling, you know, it's just once you put like people with different perspectives in a room together to speak on all these different issues, like just guiding that discussion is really like main thing that will, I guess that's like the main thing that will push forward that shift, not just like in opinion, but also generally like understanding, like I said before, like why do we have these opinions? So I think regardless of who our president is in this coming election, I feel like the constituencies that president is representing, if the constituency, and I mean like the American people, if they also have faith in, you know, in that conversation and being open-minded, I think that's like the main thing.
Yeah, I like to add on Sia's point. And basically, I've realized that human-to-human interaction, I feel like, cannot really be replicated. Like in the America in One Room project, we see a bunch of different perspectives of how different, like basically different teenagers view, you know, different political questions in the upcoming election. And it also begs a question based on how human-to-human interaction does affect how we inevitably think and how we act. And I feel like when we look at the majority of Americans in society, there's a very loud and vocal amount of people that are expressing their opinions either in the far right or far left or whatever side. But there is, I feel like, the human-to-human interaction of being able to interact with each other that deliberative polling offers to its participants is something that really can't really be replicated in any other spaces. And I feel should be applied as a more of a universal approach to discussions and harboring, like fostering discussions to work through differences in terms of political views in order to find a compromise or a middle ground.
You know, Sophie, building off of that, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on what is the role of schools in facilitating that deliberative democracy. Alex and I have been also charting the evolution of education as a foundational way to inform and engage the citizenry, and the shift now to it being essentially preparation for jobs. And many of our higher ed institutions have made the switch, and we're seeing liberal arts programs cut and these surface areas where people of different ideas or ideologically or socially, you know, essentially going into their respective political corners. What do you think the role is of school and particularly high schools in fostering that kind of deliberation?
Yeah, I think the role of schools is, especially high schools, right before people go off to college and sort of dive in on a particular discipline they're interested in. I think high schools are very critical to how people present their opinions and how open-minded they are to being exposed to a variety of ideas. I can use my classroom as an example. We have Socratic seminars in class sometimes to discuss policy issues that are at the forefront of like American politics or AI, for example. We've had Socratic seminars specifically regarding AI in classrooms where students would talk about what their current concerns are and the teacher would guide the conversation with certain questions, which is very much analogous to the deliberative poll we did, but on a smaller classroom and more casual scale. And we find that once teachers and classrooms facilitate this kind of thinking, it really transcends the classroom into every aspect. And we do think that this is also a form of career preparation, being able to vocalize your ideas and being receptive to other people's ideas. It's very important.
See, did you want to add something to that?
Yeah, sure. So I completely agree. I think we talk often about, you know, AI literacy, digital literacy overall, media literacy, but something that really needs to come to the front is democracy literacy and really understanding, like, how can we be civically engaged to ensure that our representatives, not just like in, you know, national government or federal government, but so our representatives on the local scale are really representing our beliefs and, you know, our peers as well. And I really think that, like, if these discussions, like Sophie said, with Socratic seminars or even deliberative polls, I think that's like the dream. Like, if we have deliberative polls in classrooms every now and then, like, that would really transform the way students think about how to approach their opinions. And I feel like when we write, you know, argumentative essays, we're often taught to really represent our opinions, even just, you know, like in debate class or whatever it may be, like we are taught to represent our opinion and that is it. But I think this kind of thinking where we're open-minded and we're also considering other perspectives and we're sort of melding it with our own perspective, that's something that students need to learn early on so that when they do go off with their careers or just in general, like being a citizen in the world, it's just such an essential skill to have.
Yeah, fantastic answers and really thought-provoking. I love how both of you are sort of honing in on the idea that some of these skills that we might consider liberal arts skills, you know, argumentation or persuasion, or as you said, you know, melding others' opinions to your own or understanding others' opinions and accepting them are actually career skills in a lot of ways. I think that blurs the line in a really interesting way. It also strikes me that, you know, the three of you have mentioned economics and political science as interests, which are liberal arts. And you've also obviously mentioned computer science and AI, which are considered sort of the most cutting edge career and tech skills. And I think you're also sort of being early adopters in that melding of those two types of thinking, because it feels like they're both really relevant to the future. I want to ask one very 10,000 foot view question. So Ben and I are oldies here. And when we were around your age, that was actually the beginning of the internet. You know, the 90s, when we were your age, was when the first web browsers were happening, when Google was launched, all of these things. And I think at the time, we all had a sense that something big was sort of coming. But there were some people who were like, this is the future, this is the future, get on board right now. And others were like, ah, I don't get it. Or some people will use it, but I'm going to always use my paper encyclopedias and things like that. And seeing the AI moment right now, it just reminds me so much of that moment of like, some people like yourselves are like, this is the future, get on board. This is so exciting. Everybody should know about it. And others are like, we're too busy. The pandemic is just over. We can't think about it. So with that in mind, I'd like to ask each of you to sort of, I know you haven't been through that kind of transformation yet, but I think you're going through it right now, to sort of think about what the future might look like. I'd love to hear a positive and a little bit of a warning. Like, what are you most optimistic about? And what are you worried about if AI does prove to be as big and transformative as the internet, as many people think it might be? So looking maybe 5 years from now, when you will all be at the probably around the end of your college careers, what would be an amazing world of AI and what would be a little bit of a scary world of AI? Yeah, let's start with you, Dev.
I've noticed that in the next 5 years, I feel like a big trend that we're definitely going to notice in terms of AI is definitely going to be what we've talked about already, AI and education. I do feel like the role that AI can play and machine learning can play in as a role as an educator for students, let's just say somebody that lives in Senegal that doesn't really have that might not have as much access to information as someone in the Bay Area, they could potentially have resources that exceed those that are being given in a classroom in, let's just say, like Saratoga High, where I'm from, and through like ChatGPT or other services. And I feel like the process of learning is a positive world that I see, is that the process of learning could change for the better and reflect more upon the individual experiences of the students that are seeking to learn or gain more information to create a more equitable space for not just education, but for creating a more civil and understanding society. And it could definitely, it definitely has a lot of potential in that aspect. But an issue that we're already seeing now that I feel could be built upon further is definitely the issue of misinformation, as misinformation has totally been exacerbated by AI, especially when I look on Twitter and I see these deep fake images and these fake screenshots that are created by, like, prompted by other creators on platforms in order to create more engagement, to create more controversy on these platforms, which is, I feel, is definitely an issue that has the potential to affect world politics and world events as we know it, potentially for the worse, in terms of, like, let's just say one person decides to pose as a United States ambassador and says some claim regarding another country that could cause potential foreign disputes. And it turns out the screenshot was fake the whole time. That could be a potentially huge issue that we could be seeing in the next couple of years. But I do feel AI's potential in education, but also in terms of being able to, like, as we're seeing with generative AI and with the Sora program, in terms of creating these beautiful conceptually based images and videos that are basically like very similar to Unreal Engine 5 and other video game engines, is all very interesting to watch and very interesting. It'll be very interesting to see in the next 5 years.
Yeah. Sophie, how about you?
I think a huge concern regarding AI on the flip side is that it will demand a huge change in skill sets across various careers, just as any technological revolution does. Like, such as you mentioned, when search engines came to be, there was a huge change in skill set required of people who used paper and pen previously. And we do believe that in the coming 5 years or so, that will likely be demanded from people who have no connection to AI previously and are now finding that this tool could actually greatly supplement their job function or their learning. One example I have actually is one of my teachers at my school recently showed me a tool, a very new tool that is essentially ChatGPT, but geared for teachers. It's called Elena, and he did a presentation to our school's board. And a lot of teachers afterwards came up to him and was like, that is so amazing. This could help with planning curriculums, essay prompts, and potentially coming up with stimulating ideas for my students. How do I use this? So we find that in these cases, adapting to this tool would actually be a short-term investment for a very long-lasting trend and benefit in terms of these different jobs.
So we're hearing some really positive and exciting use cases in education and some fears around misinformation or skill sets changing very quickly under people. Really interesting thoughts. How about you, Sia? What do you think?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think misinformation is definitely like the root cause of polarization, and it may be indirect, it may be direct, but in reality, like, we get our opinions, and a lot of people are getting their opinions from, you know, social media now. We're getting that, and we're seeing, you know, deep fakes or AI generated content. If students don't know how to discern from real content and AI generated content, like, it's going to really exacerbate our already key problem of misinformation. But I also, you know, on the flip side, I think AI is not going to replace us as humans. It's really, you know, as I've been saying, like, it's a supplement to what we're already doing with teachers. I think it's definitely going to help them. I know some people say that the AI may break that connection between teachers and students, but I think it's going to give teachers more like physical time to actually spend with their students and have that ability to really, you know, make that connection. And that can be seen with other careers as well. I mean, not just like on a productivity aspect, but really just understanding, like, you can even compare it to a calculator, right? Like, we all know how to add 1 + 1 and 2 + 2. But the moment, you know, you're in like high school, college, a calculator just makes that like easier. You already know how to do it. So I think just understanding the concept and then using AI to really enhance your skill set, I think that's like how it's going to be used in the future. I'm really optimistic about that.
Yeah, so just adding on to the more cautionary side of the spread of AI, I do think that the lack of equal access poses a very big problem to how certain people from certain areas will grow to implement this tool. Because like for us in the Silicon Valley, it's a given that you know what AI is and you know what buttons to click to access it. But as we've seen, there are a lot of school boards and students who just don't have the time nor the capacity to even discover this new tool. And years down the line, as this tool develops and becomes more and more powerful, there could be a very large disparity between people of different socioeconomic statuses. So we do believe that all of this benefit and this large spread technological boom is partially conditional on equal access and also the awareness of this tool.
Well, this has been an incredible conversation. We're so inspired by the three of you, Sophie, Sia, and Dev. Thank you for skipping first period and potentially second period here today to be with us. And thank you for all your work that you've been doing on deliberative democracy. And we are inspired and excited to follow your journeys as you bring in the future that's going to make the world a better place for all of us. So thanks so much for joining us here at EdTech Insiders. So glad to have you on. And if folks want to find out more about One Room, or it's called Young Americans in One Room, it's happening this July. It's the first gathering, as Sia mentioned, of its type with first-time voters. But this has gone back into 2019 with adult voters of various ages. And so expect to have some press around that. And you can also check it out on the Stanford Deliberative Democracy website. Thank you all for joining, and we hope to hear from you soon.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for listening to this episode of EdTech Insiders. If you like the podcast, remember to rate it and share it with others in the EdTech community. For those who want even more EdTech Insider, subscribe to the free EdTech Insiders newsletter on Substack.
This season of EdTech Insiders is brought to you by Tuck Advisors. Tuck Advisors is a trusted name in education M&A, founded by serial entrepreneurs with over 25 years of experience starting, investing in, and selling companies. Tuck Advisors believes founders deserve M&A advisors who work as hard as they do.